From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Next month, Barack Obama will become the first U.S. president to visit Cuba since 1928. A lot of Americans may now be thinking they'd like to visit Cuba, too. Canadians, Germans, Spaniards, the French vacation there in droves. It's getting easier for Americans. JetBlue, United, Delta, and more all looking now to fly there soon. So what is it really like? How's it work this hour on Point going to Cuba? You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are you dreaming of Havana Nights? Is Cuba on your bucket list? Have you been there recently? Tell us. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Behind me there, the sound of Havana musicians playing in front of a hotel right by the seaside there in Havana. With us right now from Miami, Florida, is Mimi Whitefield, Cuba and international business reporter for the Miami Herald. Mimi, welcome to On Point. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
And with us from Montclair, New Jersey, is Anthony DePalma. Spent 22 years as reporter, correspondent for the New York Times, much of it covering Latin America and Cuba. He now travels to Cuba with the New York Times Journeys, they're called. Anthony, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, Tom.
All right. We've got a lot to look at here. 3 million tourists or visitors from abroad to Cuba last year. A tiny number of those Americans, and we don't travel there quite the way the rest of the world can and does. But things have been changing so quickly, Mimi, since a year ago December when the U.S. and the Obama administration started warming up, opening up to Cuba. The latest thing that we just heard about, I mean, never mind hotel room shortages and what Carnival Cruise Line supposed to go into Cuba later this spring. The latest thing we're hearing about is all these American airlines now lining up for direct flights to Cuba. What is emerging there, Mimi, and when? On what kind of timetable?
Well, the airlines have until early March to submit their applications to Department of Transportation. It will look through all these applications, which cities the airlines want to fly from. There are 9 cities beyond Havana that they can apply for. There should be the most competition for Havana routes. And there'll be some back and forth. They'll try to award these routes to the ones that make the most sense from the point of view of the market. And possibly by next fall, we will have commercial airline service between the United States and Cuba.
That's kind of incredible to think of. Just grab a JetBlue flight or Southwest or whatever it ends up being down there. Now, I'm looking at the numbers here, Anthony. Of course, you know, other countries send many, many more people. We are number 18 in terms of source nations for visitors to Cuba. Canada way out front, then Germany, England, France, Italy, Venezuela, Argentina, Mexico, Spain, and Russia. Everybody's out in front of us when it comes to visiting Cuba. And I guess, Anthony, the reason is one you know well. It has been much, much tougher with the embargo and restrictions for Americans. How much have those been loosened now, and how much haven't they?
The embargo is still in place. I think that's the most important thing for your listeners to understand, that the embargo is still in place. So a lot of those things that all of those people, all those Canadians and Italians and Russians, the things that they're doing are still going to be prohibited for Americans in Cuba, meaning no tourism and no beaches. So I doubt you'll see Michelle and Barack Obama in their bathing suits wading in the fabulous beaches of Cuba. That is still off limit. Short of that, however, things have opened up considerably. The last time I went in November, I took a charter flight from Kennedy Airport that left New York City in the early afternoon and a few hours later landed in Havana.
Yeah.
So those, but it was a charter, not a commercial flight. So those things are on their way. Americans can, with some luck, I wouldn't necessarily advise it, use a credit card down there. You can use a cell phone if you have a Verizon phone. I mean, these are things that were just a year ago practically unthinkable.
And now people are talking about, I'm reading here, Mimi, people talking about a U.S. tourism tsunami
building. It's not there. It's not permitted right now, though. I mean, you can certainly visit. You can't call it tourism. You can't do exactly what tourists do. But there's so much apparently on the way and so many people with it on their bucket list already. Here's a tourist, Jerry Christ, an American, talking with Reuters about his time in Cuba just last month.
Amazed at the fact that there are so many tourists down here. I didn't realize the depth and the expanse of how many different people from all over the world are here already. And also Americans. I have seen more Americans than I thought that I would see down here.
Mimi, what kind of plans do, I mean, is this something that American, you know, travel industry executives are now salivating over? They want to put up hotels. They assume the law will change that, yes, it may not be Americans at the beach resorts right now, but soon they'll be frolicking in the Cuban surf, or is that still entirely unclear?
I think they're very interested in Cuba, but of course with the embargo there, these are just dreams. But even saying that, if you look at the numbers for people going on people-to-people tours, I think in 2014 there were 91,000 Americans who went on the people-to-people tours. Last year it was about 164,000. Most of the tour operators that I talked to, their 2016 numbers are far higher than that. And, of course, we've got hundreds of thousands of Cuban Americans who are going down there to visit their families that aren't counted in these American visitor statistics.
Anthony, remind us, of under the embargo as it is now, and the numbers are really swelling, but who can go and what for?
Right now, under the changes that have come through the Obama administration, mostly since December, but they have, since 2008, been loosening up things quite a bit. There are 12 categories of individuals who can travel to Cuba without first getting a license from the U.S. Department of the Treasury. Now, there was travel allowed before December of 2014, but it was a long and cumbersome process where you actually had to apply to the government, to the U.S. government, mm-hmm. to get permission to go down there, as well as getting your visa from Cuba. So now those 12 categories include, as Mimi said, all of those family visits, all of those Cuban Americans who have family down there. And they slice it pretty thin. I think it's got to be someone within three generations that you're related to,
okay.
that you have to have a number. Official business, journalism, of course, you can go. Professional research, educational activities, religious activities, humanitarian activities, private foundations, all of those things you can go without getting a license in advance. But you have to go with the understanding that you have to still have a certification of travel. It's sort of an honor system. And we, through the New York Times groups, have people sign these certificates that say, I understand what a general license is, and I understand what people-to-people travel is, and I agree to follow those regulations, which basically means no beach.
Let's say you land in Havana, whatever you signed in advance, grab a cab and head off to the nearest beach resort, or not even one that's not nearby. What happens? Well, who stops that, or who cares? Who's watching?
Yeah. No one may be watching right away. You are instructed, and we have to instruct the people as well, to keep a journal of all of the people that you meet. All of these categories, when they're allowed to go down to Cuba for however long you stay, the proviso is it must not include, and these are the words from the U.S. Department of the Treasury,
okay.
free time or recreation in excess of that consistent with a full-time schedule. And then you're supposed to keep that for at least 5 years. So they could basically come after you if they saw your picture on the beach in Facebook and said, hey, what is this guy doing on the beach? They'd come after – they could technically. Are they likely to do that? I don't think so.
Mimi, what's it like these days when you land in Havana, the airport, the streets, the feeling of the place compared to, I don't know, other destinations in the Caribbean?
Well, they do need some real improvement in the infrastructure in that airport in Havana. The last time I was there, it took an hour and a half for the luggage to come up. There are no benches, no
place
to sit
down. Have a cup of
coffee.
Oh, I see. No. Okay.
No. So, You will be as you walk out of the terminal. There are all these groups waiting for their family, so you kind of feel like a rock star because there are all these people clamoring, waiting for their family members. Take a car into Havana. Some of the classic cars from the 1950s are available for taxis. And you will find a city that certainly is a lot more vibrant than it was 5 years ago. And that is largely because of self-employment these days. People with casa particulares, which are like bed and breakfasts that they run privately. New private restaurants opening every day. And inventive Cubans trying to figure out how to cater to these visitors.
Private restaurants as opposed to government-run?
Yes.
So everything's a little bit different if you think, I mean, you really still are headed into a socialist, communist country where most people get their rations from the government, things are owned by the government.
Now, they have had these private restaurants for about 20 years, mm-hmm. and some of them who have been in business 20 years have become quite sophisticated. They will you will pay in Cuban convertible pesos, which is the money that tourists, foreign companies use. And there are stores where they get their supplies, but many of them that I have talked to have their own hookups, their own connections out in the countryside for lobster, rabbit, duck.
So the menu's grown a lot. The list of people heading down there has grown tremendously. Cuba opening up in all kinds of new ways. Still not fully open to Americans like the rest of the world. We'll look at that. Mimi Whitefield with the Miami Herald. Please stand by. Anthony De Palma with New York Times Journeys. We're talking about traveling to Cuba now. Have you done it? Done it recently? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. What have you seen? What would you like to see in Cuba? This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We are talking this hour about traveling to Cuba now. The sun and sand and tough politics and history, 90 miles from Florida. How Americans experience Cuba now, what's coming, how the rest of the world experiences Cuba. Of course, President Obama and the First Lady headed there next month for the first American presidential visit to Cuba in almost 90 years. You can join us this hour. Are you dreaming of a little Havana getaway, wondering if you can get your toes into the warm sand of Cuba yet? Is that anathema to you? Are you still hung up on the politics, or are you dreaming of warm Havana nights, music, cigars, vistas? We're at 800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK. Have you been recently? A little Cuban street music right there. Behind us, not so old at all. Lots of folks pouring in there now from all over the world. Anthony De Palma is with us, covered Latin America for many years for the New York Times, now works with New York Times Journeys. They do people-to-people visits to Cuba. Mimi Whitefield is with us from Miami, the Miami Herald, looking at Cuba and international business. Steve's calling in from Proctor, Vermont. Steve, what do you know of Cuba?
Well, I did a motorcycle tour there last month. An organized tour. There were five of us on motorcycles and two guides also on motorcycles. We had a wonderful time. We covered about 1,100 miles, flew directly from Miami to Havana. We stayed at several private residences during that time, and it was just a marvelous experience. I'm really happy I was able to do that.
I'm kind of blown away by the whole idea, Steve. What category of visitor did you come under? Was this people-to-people visiting or what?
We were officially people to people, which meant that we had to keep journals. We went in a number of places, met with private people. Obviously, we're staying in their homes, but we also went to a botanical field station, a crocodile raising facility. We went a lot of different places. We saw a lot. We did a lot. We didn't spend time on the beaches. I have to say that we saw the beaches, and I actually walked on a beach. But we were specifically advised that we were not tourists. We were definitely not tourists.
That's wild, not tourists, and yet motorcycle group touring all over 1,100 miles. You saw a lot of the country.
I did see a lot of country. Met a lot of people.
How far east or west did you get from Havana?
I think we got about as far as Trinidad. We did visit the Bay of Pigs site. I think we got maybe halfway from one end of Cuba to the other. So we didn't get to the eastern end, but we did see much of the western part of Cuba.
How about the roads? You know them well after 1,100 miles. How were they?
The roads range from what you would expect in a third world country, in other words, pretty bad, to fairly good. The roads weren't a real problem. We didn't do any off-roading. We were always on pavement, but the pavement varied in quality, as they say, from serious potholes to fairly smooth pavement.
How about the food and accommodations over that wide a swath of Cuba, Steve?
The food ranged from excellent. Some of the restaurants you were talking about, the private restaurants in Havana and some of the other cities, serve excellent food. The other areas, you take your chances. The food, I have to say, was not what Americans are used to typically. A lot of rice and beans. They do serve a lot of meat. As far as accommodations, some of the better hotels are as good as most anything you'll find in the States. Otherwise, you know, you take your chances. You might have hot and cold water, or you might not.
Wow, what an idea. How many days with the motorcycle crew on the roads of Cuba?
It was about 10 days total.
And what were you riding? What were you riding down there?
I was riding a Suzuki 650. There were two fellows on Harley-Davidsons, and I have to say that the Cubans really love Harley-Davidsons. Our tour group leader was what's called a Harleista, a fellow who specializes in keeping the old Harley-Davidsons running. Just as there are old Chevrolets and Oldsmobiles, there are old Harley-Davidsons as well.
That's amazing. Steve, I really appreciate your calling in with that. That is something to picture. Lots of response online here. Scooter says, 50s cars, food, music, what's not to like in Cuba? David says, I imagine Canadians and Europeans would want to keep Americans out. And Christina says, I want to get there before it becomes Americanized. We'll look at that, where all that may go. Mimi Whitefield, Anthony De Palma, please stand by. Claire Bubayer joins us right now from London. She's a travel writer, Cuba travel expert, and wrote the 2015 Frommer's Easy Guide to Cuba. Claire, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. So when you write that, are you writing for an American audience or for the global audience that can pretty much do what they like in Cuba?
A bit of both, actually, but primarily with American visitors in mind. But, you know, as Anthony knows, on those people-to-people trips, people get to go out to Paladars, the private restaurants, on their free nights. And so my guidebook includes reviews of the best Paladars in all the cities and towns of Cuba.
When Canadians or British, French, Germans, and all the rest, when they visit Cuba, is it so different for them from other destinations in the Caribbean? Or do many of them head off to beach resorts, the same kind you might find, you know, lots of other islands?
I think there's a division. It's a huge package tourist market for the Brits who go and stay in the all-inclusive luxury hotels on the coast. But then there's another segment of the British market in particular who go to explore the rich culture, the arts, the music, the rum cocktails, and tour around the whole island, either driving a car or using the coach service.
And what about when they do the package tours in Cuba? How does the cost compare for those European travelers to other Caribbean destinations, Claire?
I don't have experience of other Caribbean destinations, but I understand you can get, you know, extremely good value, like £600. I don't know what that would be, $800, $900 for 2 weeks, including international flights, all food and board. So incredible deals at various points of the year.
Wow. Let me go to Faye calling from Bridgewater, Massachusetts. Faye, thanks for calling. You're on the air. What's your experience?
Oh, hello. I went with my daughter and daughter-in-law. Actually, it was a Christmas present. January 3rd we left came back on the 8th. So it was just about a week. It was a thrill. One of the places that impressed me was they had a sustainable agricultural community. Now, this was a Havana tour, so we didn't range like your motorcycle guest, but we did get out to some of the countryside, and that agricultural community was very interesting. They had a physician there. We spent some time talking with her. We learned a little bit about the health care provided, and again, to discover free health care. This poor country, free health care, free education. We did go to the university. We were able to have a lecture with a young student. He's a graduate student, who told us something about the experience. I learned from the guy that each young man has to do 1 year of military service before he goes to college.
Yeah.
That's not required of the women.
Faye, let me ask you, what about America? You've learned a lot on this tour about Cuban, sort of social ways and politics and social welfare. What about sun and fun people? Is it a place for them these days or not?
Well, I think that is to come. Again, this was a guided tour. It was controlled. Mm-hmm. It was arranged through Friendly Planet. I don't even know what it cost because my daughter wouldn't tell me. This was a special gift to me because she knew I'd been wanting to go for years.
Lucky you.
Not that I'm Cuban or I have any Latin American ethnic
just wanted
responsibility
to see it.
For this. But it was just, I think it troubled me so that our government had been so narrow in its response to what took place in the revolution.
Sounds like you had a good time, and I would say, listening to you, you'd go again, Faye.
Well, I would go in a minute. There wasn't enough time. We were spoiled. We stayed at the Hotel Nacional, and quite interesting to go down and to see a photograph of when Batista hosted the mob there, and you can understand what the Cuban people went through. However, now what I have learned we went to a lecture by an economics professor from the university, and he wanted to impress on us how desperate they are for investment. He wanted us to come back and to talk to anyone that we possibly could about opening up, ending the embargo, that they have so much to offer us, and they are desperate for American investment.
Faye, we've got it. I know people are investing from all over the world, Mimi. I've seen somebody here describing what's coming as Las Vegas meets Miami in the Caribbean. Is it clear what path development of Cuba's going to take? A lot of people are very happy with the old Havana kind of reconstruction and refurbishing that's gone on, but where does it go as more money rolls in, Mimi?
Well, if you look at Western Cuba, there are miles and miles of pristine, undeveloped beaches, and the Cubans have set a lot of territory aside for nature preserves, but I think down the road there's still a lot to be developed in that country. There's some really beautiful beaches that, as I say, are totally undeveloped. And I think the Cubans actually want to balance it. Environment and ecology are going to be a part of future development, although I've seen there's some huge developments that they have on the planning board that they are looking for foreign investment.
I mean, I'm reading here Jorge Perez, this Cuban-American condo tycoon in Miami, was in Havana. He said, you know, I wish they'd let me develop this. I could change it in 10 or 20 years. If they open things up, I could build a luxury condominium in Vedado. I could sell them all in 2 hours here in Miami. But who knows exactly what that pace of opening is going to be. plenty of wariness too. Clive in Hollywood, Florida. Clive, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
Yeah. What do you know?
I just went there in December. It was actually my second trip. I went there in 2003. And the difference that I saw from 2003 into today was amazing. The place is crawling with tourists, a lot more Americans. There was all kinds of different clubs there, and Rhodes Scholar, and like the other person spoke about, Friendly Planet. And the feeling there now is much more friendlier and much more open, and there is a lot less anti-American propaganda, which is what we saw in 2003. The Cuban Five, I think they were called, were still jailed in Miami for spying, and they've been released. And it's just a much more warm and welcoming atmosphere. And I think they're really looking forward to having more Americans there. And at the same time, it kind of concerns me because that place is a paradise trapped in 1959. And to me, that's a good thing because coming from South Florida and witnessing Condo Canyon grow up all around me, I would hate to see the same thing happen in Cuba. And I hope that it doesn't. And I'm hoping that maybe they can capitalize on their ecological treasures that they have, like Costa Rica, and go in a more friendly way to the environment and not ruin their shoreline like what we have in South Florida.
Yeah, Clive, I appreciate your call. Anthony De Palma, how do you see this unfolding? If, you know, our caller talks about the old days of mob bosses down in Havana with the last ruler before the revolution there, Batista. Nobody thought that was a really healthy relationship. If you unleashed all of the American economy and travelers on Cuba, you could have a lot of change in a hurry. And some would be great and some surely would not. And then there's all the politics. Cuba doesn't want to just be engulfed by American cultural values and political values. That's quite clear. So how does this dance move forward, Anthony?
Mm-hmm. Tom, first, a shout out to Claire. I haven't seen her for a while. Hi, Claire.
Great.
You know, I object, or I would ask you to reconsider calling what's down there a paradise.
And this is our Florida caller comparing it to Florida and seeing it that way.
Yeah, but you know, for tourists who are there for 5 days or 7 days, you know, it's quite exciting. But remember, there are 11 million Cubans who live there all the time. And the conditions under which they live, certainly they would not consider it a paradise. Raul Castro, since he took over permanently in 2008, has opened up the economy, which was, you know, a strictly controlled economy. He's opened it up in small steps. But understand that the overwhelming majority of all of the industry and all of the business, including all of those tourist hotels, majority controlled by the Cuban government. And although Raul and the people underneath him have moved towards opening up a little bit to allow Americans to come in, they have not given an inch on the political side. So it is still a single party ruled by the Communist Party and two men who have been in charge since 1959. They don't indicate any willingness to change that system. So any business that's going down there, any investment that's going down there, primarily is going to be an investment with that government. And I don't know exactly how that's going to turn out, except that Raul has said, unlike his brother, who was in power from 1959 until 2006 when he took sick, Raul says, you know, nobody should be in charge that long, and nobody should be in charge more than two terms. So his second term ends just after President Obama's term ends. So Obama goes out in 2017. Raul goes out in 2018. Understand that a lot of these changes are taking place because of those two men and their willingness to work together. What happens after that, somewhat up in the air. No one expects that everything is going to shut down and revert to what it was like before, nor does anyone expect that it's going to, all of the controls are going to be lifted and it will be Miami down on the Malecón. So it'll be somewhere in between depending on how much the hardliners can keep control and how much the reformers are willing to respond to the demands of the people. As the people see all Americans come in and they see all these tourists, while it's nice to have that money there, they also get a different sense of what it is that they are missing. This is one of the least wired countries in the world today. So every time you open up a little Wi-Fi spot and you start to allow people to see what's happening outside, they kind of want what they see that they don't have.
Of course, and that's happening some of the parks in Havana now and beyond. Cubans clustering there, trying to get on Wi-Fi that they haven't had access to. This fascinating tension as U.S.-Cuba relations warm. How far does development go? How many Americans end up having winter, summer, year-round destinations in Cuba? Anthony DePalma with New York Times Journeys. Please stand by. Mimi Whitefield with the Miami Herald. Claire Bubayer with Frommer's Easy Guide to Cuba with us from London today. Behind us right here, OK Cuba, Havana Club Rumba Sessions. Listeners, you can join us. Have you been? What have you seen? 800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
This On Point podcast is supported by Squarespace. If you have a passion that you obsess over, if it keeps you up at night, if you live for it, you should show it off. With easy-to-use tools and templates, Squarespace helps you showcase every detail of what drives you. Because if it's worth the effort, it's worth showing to the world. Start your free trial today. Visit squarespace.com/onpoint. That's squarespace.com/onpoint. You should. Squarespace.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about traveling to Cuba now as Americans. The sun and sand, yes, but also tough politics and tough history. 90 miles from Florida, looking at how Americans experience Cuba now, what's coming, how the rest of the world experiences Cuba. Claire Bubayer is with us. She wrote the 2015 Frommer's Easy Guide to Cuba. Joins us today from London. Mimi Whitefield is with us from the Miami Herald, looking at business down there. Anthony DePalma covered Latin America and more for 20-plus years for the New York Times, is with New York Times Journeys now, and has been plenty to Cuba. You can join us this hour as well. Have you been? What have you seen? What about the politics and reality of life that goes on there, even as more and more of a traveler economy grows on top of and within Cuba? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Of course, those famous old cars from the 50s still on the streets. Here's visitors in the back of an old convertible going through historic Havana. Hear the sound of Cubans dancing and playing music on the streets of Havana in December from the Miami Herald. And here, Luis Carlos Benvenuto Solas owns a private restaurant in Havana. Talked to Reuters just last month about how the growth in tourism is affecting his business, interpreted here by Reuters.
The groups that are coming are also bigger, so that is good for business. It's a big challenge because it's the issue of suppliers and how to get everything to maintain the same standard and the same quality. It makes it very complicated. Since there are no wholesale stores, we have to buy in the same stores as everyone else, and there isn't a lot of stock, actually.
Yeah, a lot of Cubans on rations for better and for worse. And just, Claire Bubayer, what have you seen about what it takes to make these private restaurants and hotels and all the growth work in an economy that's not a market economy, not necessarily geared to supplying, as the restaurateur there was saying, the consistent needs of a place like that?
Somebody told me recently that it takes 2 years to set up the supply chain for a private restaurant in Havana, just because things have to be secured. Quite a lot of things have to be secured on the black market. There are no wholesale markets for these private restaurants as yet. And so it's a lot of work to bring that meal to the table for the visitor.
And yet somehow they're dealing with 3 million visitors from abroad every year, Claire. They're somehow accommodating people.
It's called having great contacts. That's how Cuba works, great contacts in a black market.
What about accommodations? We saw that Airbnb has set up in Cuba now. Is it really, really a going thing there? Or is it hotels and what do they call it? The casa particulares, these B&Bs that are the mainstay?
Well, Airbnb has taken up a lot of those casa particulares onto its books. But those Casas, those bed and breakfasts are also accessible to anybody via other websites, via guidebooks. They are doing extremely well. There's a real scarcity of rooms in Cuba. There's not enough hotel capacity. The government are rapidly building new hotels. Just 2 weeks ago, another set of boarding went up on the Malecón for a new Sofitel that will be out there on the Sea Road. So those casas take up a lot of the travelers. But I even understand that there's so much demand that tourists have been sleeping out on plazas in Vinales and recently in Trinidad. And Trinidad has, I think, 1,000 of these casas, bed and breakfasts. So you can see that this is really the tip of the iceberg of the strain on Cuba's infrastructure.
Trinidad, of course, across Cuba on the south coast, across from Havana on the south coast of Cuba. So tourists really making themselves felt in the Malecón there, the big promenade in Havana. Way more demand than rooms right now. Jennifer in Marathon, Florida. Jennifer, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah. What do you know?
Well, I'm a part-time tour director. I work for Friendly Planet, and so I've been to Cuba four times in 2014, and I'm about to head there again on Sunday for another trip. So I'm sort of the American representative there, working with a national guide, coordinating everything, making sure everybody gets to the events on the agenda in the order that they're supposed to be and things go smoothly.
And give us a sense of the flavor of it, Jennifer. You know, millions of Americans go to the Caribbean for beach vacations. That's not what Cuba's about for Americans yet. So do people come with the right expectations of what they're going to be permitted to actually do?
Yes, I think most of the Friendly Planet passengers, for sure, are prepared pretty well. They know that we have an itinerary, that they are to follow that itinerary. They sign a document that the U.S. government requires them to sign, a travel authorization, saying that they will participate in the events that are scheduled. However, they do have a moderate amount of free time. They have evenings, a couple of evenings in the week on their own, and a little time, sometimes our afternoon schedule will end at 3 or 4, and they'll have the rest of the day to explore a little bit on their own. So they do get to do a little bit of unscheduled travel.
Jennifer, I appreciate your call. Anthony DePalma, you've been plenty. The Airbnb accommodations, the Casa Particulares, not the big hotels. Do Americans have access to those, or do the kind of tours that you go with use those or not? And what about, say, the nightlife? Can Americans go out and, first of all, is it very active in Havana and beyond, and can Americans be part of it?
Mm-hmm. Tom, most of the restrictions are restrictions from our government, not from the Cuban government.
Understood.
So once you're down there, they really are quite free to go wherever. We don't use the Times Journeys doesn't use those bed and breakfasts. They tend to have a more structured travel. The staying in hotels will stay in an environmental biosphere. Out in the west of Havana, and then they go into Pinar del Rio and then come back to Havana all of the time in the hotels. At night, our groups and most of the other groups do have a couple of nights that are free, and there are no minders that you normally see. You're free to wander around with Cubans and with other tourists. Nobody really knows who you are. You don't have to show a paper to get in anywhere. Mm-hmm. A lot of those restaurants work just the way restaurants work in Miami or Rio or anywhere else. There's somebody outside asking you to come in, showing you the menu. You sit down, and as long as you have those convertible pesos, mm-hmm. you're free to sit down. You can't use your credit card. An American credit card doesn't work in most instances. That may change at some point in the future. Change your dollars into kooks. That's what they're called, the convertible peso, and you're free.
And what about the nightlife, Anthony? Are Americans in on it? Is it robust these days? We have this sense from the old days, and, you know, revolutionary Cubans would say the corrupt old days, but of this very robust musical tradition there, is it all over now? Is it vigorous?
Oh, there are clubs and bars, upscale bars, galleries, sometimes a combination of all of those, and some of the old-fashioned ones, the Tropicana, which was operating even when I went to Cuba for the first time in 1979, in the gray old days when there were more Soviet jeeps on the streets than there were Americans by far, the Tropicana was still operating, and they still had the fancy outfits and the long tables with some rum. And that time they weren't drinking Coke. They were drinking ginger ale. Today you can find Buena Vista clubs all over the place. New disco kind of art combinations that could be, if you walked into them, it could be South Beach on a Saturday night. And Americans are free to go to any of those places if they can get in.
And it's not just Buena Vista Social Club kind of stuff. Here's one of the more popular Cuban rap groups, Los Aldeanos.
Y yo sé que yo a la vida no le tengo miedo.
I know that I, to life, I'm not afraid. Don't give anybody no. I will stand up with my voice. Well, okay. Sam in North Miami. Sam, thanks for calling. You're on the air. What do you know?
Hey, Tom. How are you?
Okay.
Good. There's a few callers you had kind of hit it right on the head about the government and the people and the United States, the tourists that are anxious to go. It's still a very oppressive government, and it's a little disturbing to see our government, kind of bending, in the direction that it seems it's headed, and supporting in a great financial way, a government that, there's really no freedom. The people have no ability to vote for who they want, and the government is totally in control.
Sam, we know that critique, and we've seen so many decades in which that's been the case. And at the same time, I'm looking at these numbers, and, they had 3 million visitors from abroad last year, overwhelmingly not American. Going forward, if we had more Americans in Cuba, would that actually help loosen the place up, to your mind, or not?
Well, in my opinion, I've been going for quite a few years, and I've seen many changes come and go, which is very typical of the government that's been in control. They loosen up, and then they reverse their opinions, and that's because they're allowed to do whatever they want. Most Americans don't understand that kind of government. We've never had that kind of experience.
Yep, we've got the reminder right there, Sam, and I appreciate it. And let me get one more call here from north of the border in Canada. Doug, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hello, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
Yes, I have been to Cuba roughly 40 times, and I've been going since the early 1980s.
40 times? You've got to be a Canadian, not an American, as we see.
We're a beach family, but every trip I manage to leave the family at the beach. I get on a bus, and I take the bus trip into Havana. I do it myself. I just get off the bus. I arrange a pickup point and a time, and I walk Havana for the 7 or 8 hours.
Yeah,
and it's just a fantastic city.
Doug, what are Americans missing by not being able to do Cuba the way you do as a Canadian?
I think the Cubans would love the Americans. That's my conversation. I think they appreciate the Canadians. We've been going there since probably the '60s, but you can just sense by the conversations on the beach, they are in such anticipation of the Americans coming down. They really are. Everything is baseball and American, so they would really love that tourism uptick that would come with the probably pent-up demand that's going to put a couple of million Americans in there in line with us Canadians at the buffet table.
Well, sorry, it's going to make it more crowded for you Canadians if it ever comes to that. I mean, things are changing. When the president's there, it'll be the same time, I think, that the Tampa Bay Rays are down playing Cuba's national baseball team. March 22nd, things changing. Whether it gets to a couple million, that'd be a big change. Doug, I appreciate your call. 40 visits from Canada to Cuba. My goodness, beach people. Chris in Franklin, Tennessee. Chris, you're on.
Thank you. Hey, Tom. My wife and I just came back from 30 days in Cuba, mostly in Havana, my ninth trip. I think the last couple of callers have really started getting down to the crux of the situation in Cuba. Less than 20% of the population doesn't work for the state. my wife and I got off the beaten path. In 30 days, we walked and we talked and we got away from the crowds and the tourists.
Yeah.
And everybody says the same thing. We need the government to get their boot off the backs of our neck. Look around. Look how we live. And if, see, the people that go as tourists only see the hot spots, and they go out and they have,
yep,
they have their fun, and then they're back a couple days later on the plane. They tell everybody what a wonderful time they had.
Yeah.
But if you get out and you walk through the back streets, you see how awful the conditions are for these people. And it's not a paradise.
And we got that, Chris. Though I should say, you know, you can go to other Caribbean destinations, and outside the resort, it can be tough as well. But still, I get it. What, 9 trips? What takes you so much, Chris? What's your relationship with Cuba?
Well, I went in the early days as a correspondent for CNN, but then I decided to go on my own. I've been looking for little situations that perhaps I could use as an investment, and I've found one. But my proposal is right on the same table as the proposal for Cargill and JetBlue and FedEx and all of those big guys. But they all say the same thing, Tom. Nothing will change for growth until the infrastructure is improved. When you can't get fresh water, when you can't get toilets that flush, when you get flooding on the streets from the waves in the Malecón, until the infrastructure grows, there can be no more investment growth.
Chris, we've got it. Mimi Whitefield, I understand the difficulty that presents. At the same time, I'm reading all kinds of big plans here for development in Cuba. I mean, in American or otherwise, people seem to be headed there with investment.
Well, I think the important thing to remember is, in terms of the United States, the Obama administration has loosened regulations on trade and travel, but ultimately it's Cuba that will control that pace of opening toward the United States. There are a number of offers on the table for cruise and ferry service from the United States to Cuba. It's up to Cuba to decide when, how much, whether they want this. And these days, if you talk to Cuban officials, they'll tell you, yes, Cuba must open to the world. The United States is part of that world, but it's not the only show in town.
Well, this new aviation agreement, 30 flights a day allowed from the United States to Cuba. Lots of Americans, as we've heard, eager and interested to be on them. Fascinating to hear what they'll find when they get there, and grateful to all three of you for helping us just get a sense of that. Mimi Whitefield with the Miami Herald, thank you so much for being with us today. Really great to have you from Miami.
Thank you, Tom.
Claire Bubayer with the Frommer's Easy Guide to Cuba, joining us today from London. Claire, thanks for collecting all that terrific information and for sharing just a bit of it with us today. Thank you, Claire.
Thank you, Tom.
And Anthony DePalma with the New York Times Journeys. Anthony, good luck, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Tom. Anytime.
Listeners, thanks for all of your travel tales from Cuba. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.